Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
It is hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. I hope you're having an outstanding day, as we certainly are right here with two down and three to go. A lot happening on the fan cam. If you're missing out at 105.3thefan.com/fancam, Broadus is working a green screen right now, and he has something new almost every segment. Right now it's crawfish in the back with the corn on the cob and everything. Looks like a fresh crawfish boil has been done. Tis the season.
Tis the season. About. Yeah, this is actually a picture from one of my boils over at Jeff Cavanaugh's place. So,
oh, that's an outstanding picture.
Yeah, you had to kind of incorporate it, and hopefully, like I say, in the springtime, we can all get together and do this again.
It's a good camera right there. And Jeff looks like he's got some of his, what is that, that Rocky Mountain
Smoky Mountain fake dip.
It's not the real stuff, right?
That's a Smoky Mountain herbal snuff, wintergreen, no tobacco. It's molasses, corn silk, water, kudzu root, salt. That's what I got.
All righty.
I'm going to bring you some Reese's peanut butter cups here soon.
Got the fake dip. I got some sugar-free candy being delivered today.
There you
from
go.
Amazon.
There you go.
Lollipops, Jolly Ranchers, all
there
sorts
you go.
Of sugar-free versions.
That'll help you.
Amazing. Yeah. See what Gavin's up to here in a second. Got a lot happening.
He's being a dad,
sorry.
I think.
It's 4 o'clock. My daughter's calling me, and if she's not home, that means she's at the elementary because somebody's not picking her up right now. I'm sorry to be attempting to manage that. And hollering into the house
dad,
with the
man.
Mic off is Abby home three times. Produce no answer.
Just okay, dad. Well, what about this? What's the topic? We'll handle that, and you handle that.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you got
What's
for
the topic?
Luka, is he back in the MVP race?
Let's go.
All right, you're excused, Gavin. You can go figure that
call
out.
Abby for 20 seconds.
Yeah, we can handle this. Maz last night kicked butt.
Love that, man.
I tell you what, my favorite thing is something that I think Coop noted this after the game. Mm-hmm. Is like, look, Luka's amazing, and he's always going to be amazing. The way that he can just split double teams, get to the rim whenever he wants. But the threes are starting to fall, and like all the great players, it's like, okay, what did you add this offseason? And for Luka in that game, it looks like what Luka added this offseason is a mid-range game.
How about that?
Like he's been real comfortable pulling
How
up
about
from
that?
Between like 12 and 16 feet, and he's hitting jumpers. So, yeah, I think we can complain about the conditioning early in the year, and we did, and we weren't wrong. But he's absolutely balling now, and it looks like one of the best players in basketball did add something to his game. Luka's got a little mid-range action going.
How about Luka chasing people around on defense last night?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something when you're watching. I mean, we talked about scramble situations and stuff. But, man, they are contesting a lot of shots. The last night, though, the ball, he had nothing for him. I mean, he took some shots, didn't make Charlotte didn't shoot great. Neither did the Mavs there for a while in that second half. It was kind of tough to watch in the third. But the one thing, you could see defensive effort, and Rick was talking about that slap the floor, pick up guys coming down the court. That's the Mavericks are playing with a lot of intensity. The fact that they had Charlotte was, for a long time, Charlotte had like 74 points. In the game, I'm like going, man, they ain't going to score any more than this.
For like 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. And so
it was brutal.
That's the thing I think that excites. Rick afterwards was talking about how much, every night Luka, he appreciates how he's playing. But, man, they were shorthanded. And, man, and to get the victory against the team that beat him, a few days before, so it tells you a lot about what that team's mindset is right now.
Yeah, and I really appreciate a lot of the stuff Rick was talking about last night as far as when your two best players are committed on the defensive end, that's contagious, right? Because if the guys that might have an excuse to rest for offense are down there and they are doing the equivalent of slapping the floor and giving their all out, I think, it's what this team needs to get to a championship level. I do think, ideally you would have a team good enough that your best offensive players could take quarters off, could take nights off defensively and coast, because it is a long season and grinding on both ends of the court is really going to wear you down, not only in the game but for the season. and for your career. So we'll see. But for now, you're young enough with Porzingis and Luka. And the great thing is Luka's playing high 30s in minutes compared to low or mid 30s earlier in his career. So I do believe he was out of shape. But now he's showing that he wasn't that far out of shape, because signs are he's in the best shape of his career. And the ability to play a defense, he's never going to be a lockdown guy. But that's that old adage that defense is a lot of effort. Now, yeah. If you are very fast and have incredibly long limbs, that's going to give you an advantage. But you can be quite good. And Rick has been a very good defensive coach over his career. So this is a great sign. You know, not only does it speak to Luka as an individual, but this is what the team needs to reach its goals.
Boy, they looked long last night with Porzingis and then Cauley Stein on the floor.
Yes.
You know, that is a team that gets to, you know, and against Charlotte the first time around, they lost on a lot of 50-50 balls. They didn't lose on 50-50 balls last night. And the thing with Porzingis, he's not going to give you an easy shot around the rim. You know, he is going to reach, and he's going to put hand in face. He's going to be able to tip the ball to himself. I mean, there was a couple times he hit the deck, and I'm like, oh, please, man, get up. But he was just retying his shoe. I thought something, he was going to hold his ankle or something, but no, I mean, having him back, I think it gives your team a little bit of a lift. You know, with it, that's just that extra bit on that offensive side of the court that gives you something. But on the defensive side, he's going to contest a lot of shots. And Cauley Stein, it looks like he's becoming more comfortable too now that he's starting these games for the Mavs.
Rick did tremendous stuff with Dirk and Tyson Chandler and, you know, shaping that into one of the best team defenses in the entire NBA. Cauley Stein and Porzingis, quite similar, where, hey, you know, here's Porzingis. He's not cutting. He's not moving. He's not going to be one of the fastest guys out there. But the size, the position.
Yes.
And hands in face.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody is better at putting that part of the defense together than Rick Carlisle. But Luka and the MVP over the last five games, guys, he's averaging a 30-point triple-double.
Yeah.
Basically in the new year.
Uh-huh.
So
it's got it's coming with wins. It's got to come with wins, and it's got to be without selfishness. Because like Russell Westbrook pulled that off, and it was really cool. It was fun to watch. You know, he's a one man show, but it feels different with Luka. Like it feels like this is a winning product that can go into the postseason and win playing like that. Because the 30-point triple double on its own to me is nothing, because I've seen it for a season. And it didn't lead to a team being good at basketball.
Right.
But the Mavericks are getting that out of their trigger man on a team that looks really good. And by the way, based on what I'm looking at right now, they wanted to get good at defense. They're second in the NBA in defensive efficiency.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Second in the league.
And they're one of the best teams when it comes to running the floor, too. They're getting a lot of these fast break points and stuff like that off these turnovers. I mean, they're getting the ball out and up the court quickly. But I love what Jeff said, though, about the mid-range stuff. With Luka, you're kind of thinking, okay, hit the threes, oh, the drive, the penetration game, the lay-ins. Oh, wait, he's going to float here and just kind of let one go, and it goes in. You know, that's the stuff this team. I mean, when maybe things aren't going really great, Luka coming down, little mid-range, boom, goes in there, gets everybody back on track, play a little defense, get back down, make a couple of passes. You know, you got Hardaway hitting a three. That's how these guys are winning basketball games right now. They're playing really well on the defensive side, but getting some really good shots off.
Yeah, the one-legged fade, maybe inspired by Dirk. Seems like all the best players have that in their arsenal now, but he's showing that off a little bit. And, yeah, with his size, you know, those are waters you can harvest. And you don't want to be spending the majority of your time from 12 to 18 feet, you know, threes or layups. But sometimes the defense is going to get really good. And if you can answer it with, okay, I'll go over here. If you're going to shut down the three and the layup, the best chance is here. It's not ideal, but it can save bad possessions and it can save horrible shooting nights.
I remember a game earlier in the season with Chris Paul, right? Chris Paul, that little, he gets to the edge there and he hits it. You know, he hits like two or three of those in a row. He might not be having a great shooting night, but all of a sudden the fourth, they're trying to close and they're hitting those big shots. You know, and that's, if you can have that as part of your, in the old tool belt, you know, you're good to go.
Well, going into the season, Luka was a slight favorite over Giannis for MVP. Over the first six games, it looked like Giannis might overtake him and Luka might fade. On the FanDuel odds that I found this morning, recently posted, Luka's at plus 480 now for the MVP. Giannis plus 600, so there's a little bit more space. KD, second in the NBA here in his first year back from the Achilles. He's not going to struggle to return from that injury. He is at plus 700. Steph Curry, plus 750. Then you have Jokic, Embiid, LeBron, Anthony Davis. And then,
so Luka is the favorite?
He is absolutely the favorite.
He's the betting favorite?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Win a bunch of games, he can win it.
Oh, yeah.
And on a run right now.
I think they are going to win a bunch of games. Last year, you stay healthy, I think they would have been a top four seed. They were great in the bubble. You know, I think this was trending as a team that was going to be really good offensively, win a bunch of games in the regular season, but then have a hard time getting stops and grinding out tough postseason games.
Yeah.
They're adding this defense, though, and we knew that it was a big focus with how they attacked draft night and the trade they pulled off for Josh Richardson and the free agent additions. I didn't think it would be able to gel this quickly. You know, how permanent is being one of the top five teams in defensive efficiency? If you get to the 30 or 40 game mark and that's holding, guys, this team can win a championship. Are you ready for that, DFW?
I mean, right now they're 15th in offensive efficiency.
Yeah.
But that's coming.
It is.
You know, you got KP back. Last night, Luka is, I mean, all kinds of different threes, whether it was step back, coming off of a screen, whatever. He's starting to hit. So the offensive rating or the offensive efficiency for this team is going to go up.
Yeah.
They can maintain what they're doing defensively. Yeah, they're a team to deal with.
They need to get Richardson going. That's the thing about it is, man, because he gives them some quality minutes on the defensive side of that. He really has bought in. You could tell that his makeup is that of a toughness. Every time they get a stop, you could see him. He's kind of pumping his fist to himself. You know, he's excited about that, you know. And when they get to a timeout, he's like high-fiving everybody. Hey, good job, and that kind of stuff. If they could get him shooting well, making some shots, knocking some of those down like we saw in the preseason, then all of a sudden the efficiency goes up. But, man, I am excited about the defense. I really am excited about that.
It is nice, but, man, if you could get Richardson scoring, because Hardaway's in the midst of a nice run, maybe cooled off a little bit with his percentages last night, but it's not always going to be the case.
Yeah,
you need a rotating cast of quality players who can step up and help you get
those.
But,
man, he is not afraid. He took three in a row that I was like, two go in, and the third one I'm like, oh, that's a heat check right there, you know, and it banged off. But he's not afraid. That's good. I mean, if they keep bringing him off the bench, he's accepting this role for right now, and Rick will keep tinkering with this thing. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
And they showed you last night that maybe they are pretty dang deep as Boban and Trey Burke.
How can you manage the COVID situations, you know, and you have to manage it with depth, and that's the one thing that they were able to show last night.
James Johnson had three blocks to go with
He's
7 points and
too,
five
yeah.
rebounds.
Yeah.
Looks spry on a drive and dunk. I think he
I
looks
he bringing the ball up. And, I'm like, what?
And maybe, well, Brian Rona, you know, your options were limited.
No, I'm just saying he looks good doing it.
I thought that when he had the blonde hair,
looked old.
He looked
crusty.
Really old, and maybe he was spry out there. Yeah. But since he got the fresh fade on the top there, he looks more springy.
Yeah. He does.
You know, he was looking old man. Now he looks springy.
Yeah. I think that's that martial arts and vegetarian lifestyle. You know, he's kind of the Tom Brady, the NBA, running around out there. Even though he'll kickbox the hell out of you, and he's, you know, not quite as maybe peaceful as Tom Brady.
I think he's probably more peaceful.
He's been in the league for a long time. You know,
yeah,
13 years.
And he's moving around better than guys who are 10 years younger than him. So congrats to James Johnson and salute. I mean, him in the defense and Luke in the defense and everything being elevated around them is great. You mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein. He had three blocks his last night.
Yeah.
Pulled down 14 rebounds.
It was all beautiful stuff, too. And Josh Green got going. I know we talked about him a little bit last night. Are we worried about Josh Green and some of the others around the league? He looked like last night he was far more comfortable than he was the other night against Orlando. You know, he's just like, okay,
yeah.
I'm fitting in. This is where I'm supposed to be. Attacking the basket, the alley-oops, the things like that, man. That's good if the young guy can get going there.
And then we should tip our cap to Porzingis. You know, the 16 points, you're like, oh, disappointing? No, it was 21 minutes of action.
21 minutes.
He looked great.
Yeah.
He did. He definitely set himself up to hit the ground running, moving around.
Started hot, too.
He sure did.
Started hot with the It's always fun when you have a guy who's comfortable range. Not like he can, but his comfortable range is what, like 4 feet behind the line?
Oh, he could dead middle. You just give him the ball dead middle, and he's just going to bang that thing off the back of the iron. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good shot.
So, indeed, I think the Mavs flexing. Now, we should say Charlotte not good. They did not play defense. It was so many layups, and the Mavs were, like, giddy, laughing to each other like schoolgirls about how easy some of those were. And they didn't shoot the ball well.
Yeah, they were bad shooting last night. The combinations, they had problems last night shooting. I think that's – but the Mavs took advantage of that. You know, comfortable distance the whole time. You know, that's – I think defensive pressure helped there, and the fact that the Mavs were shooting better. They forced Charlotte into some bad situations there with some shot selections and defending around the rim and stuff, not giving them a second chance, those 50-50 balls like I was talking about. I remember watching that first time they played. Man, it seemed like Dallas lost every single 50-50 ball in that game. Not last night. And they did a nice job of taking advantage of some poor shooting of Charlotte.
All righty. Great stuff, gentlemen. Thanks for the NBA conversation. Thanks for your feedback on the AutoFlex Leasing fan text here, by the way. It's good stuff. Okay, coming up next, time for a Jeff and Brian segment of the day. Gentlemen, where are we headed with that?
Let's talk about why it'll probably work out for Urban here in Jacksonville. That's next.
Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for Jeff and Brian's segment of the day. It's brought to you by Rubin and Associates. If you're drowning in debt, call our guy, Mark Rubin, at 1-800-LAWYERS. He will talk with you personally. Take control of your debt, eliminate your stress, and allow you to live life again. It starts with a simple confidential phone call to Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. Rubin and Associates, 1-800-LAWYERS. Here they are, Kavanaugh and Broadus.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
I'm Brian.
All right, let's talk about Urban Meyer a little bit. Urban Meyer looks like is going to be taking the job as the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. And Albert Breer, this is going to be quotes that are actually from a year ago when he did not take a job, but he was talking to Urban Meyer about the research he'd done about the NFL and if he wanted to coach there and, you know, kind of what you got to do. And first, can I get your predictions? Urban Meyer at Jacksonville, is this going to turn into a winning product and he's going to coach there for at least a half decade or no?
I would not say a half decade. No, I'm not that confident in it. I think it's tough to go. You know, the whole player acquisition process, I have a lot of reasons to be doubtful that Urban Meyer is going to step in there and be good. So I will say no, Jeff. That's my prediction. I'm willing to bet Broadus on it too.
Oh, we got a Krusty. He's crossing Krusty.
No, I understand, because what will happen is, and Gavin's probably looking at what happened with Nick Saban. You know, the same type of situation. You go into Miami, you have some control, you have some say. Are you out of your element in recruiting, you know, going out and getting the best players from Ohio and Florida and Pennsylvania and all that? The draft is the only way to do that. Yeah, I could see why people would not think this is going to work. But I'm betting on the fact that everywhere that Urban Meyer has been, whether that's Bowling Green, whether that's Utah, whether that's Florida, whether that's Ohio State, those programs have risen to new levels. And I think that it's in his DNA as a program builder. Now, he might not last because he'll get burnt out or something like that'll happen, but the Jacksonville Jaguars will have in place something going forward after he's gone, where they'll say, okay, that was the right way to go. We saw the right path. This is how we need to evaluate the players and stuff like that. So I am saying, yes, he will have success, unlike what with Nick Saban had when he was with the Dolphins.
Okay, well then let's talk about some of the things he said to Albert Breer. And you tell me, are these things that you're just saying? How common is it that these are things people have in the NFL, or are teams not necessarily like this and it's why he'll succeed? So Albert Breer asked him about his NFL research and, you know, if you're going to get an NFL job, what have you learned or what are you trying to learn? He said, the best thing I did, I called a bunch of our former athletes. I just asked them, tell me about the culture, tell me about the team meetings, the expectations, the work ethic, the accountability. I had an idea, but what's amazing to me is when I hear the media and the fans and even others say the reason they're losing is because they have bad players. That's one of the most nonsensical things I've ever heard in my life. I mean, they're NFL players. There's not a bad player in the NFL. Now you have superstars. Some might not be the right fit. They might have some character flaws, might be some stuff going on. But to use the term bad player, and I hear that as an excuse. Hey, he's a bad quarterback. What are you talking about? Because I've heard that. And I used to get angry when they'd say that about our players. I'd hear someone say that Alex Smith is a bad player. He was the best thing I'd been around when he came out of Utah. Then I'd do the homework and find out what it is. it's certainly not bad players. And here's the key. There are certain organizations that win every year. There are certain organizations that can't win. Yet, they have better players on paper than the other organizations because they draft before them every year. Every year. So I challenge everyone. When you say they're a bad player, are you out of your mind? They're not bad players. He says culture and criteria. There's two things you have to do. Number one, develop and implement a culture in your organization. And it's got to be a culture. This is the way it is, non-negotiable. Then the other thing is talent acquisition. How are you acquiring talent? What's your criteria? Is everyone on the same page? And what I found out, those who win, that's it. Those who fail to win, that's it. How much do you think really boils down to that? Because it's a good point.
Oh,
a lot of the bad teams draft in front of the good teams all the time. So in theory, you're acquiring better talent than them.
Yeah.
But somewhere in there, something's getting lost because it's not working.
Gavin will love this because Bill Walsh believed he was, at the time, he was only competing against six teams. He said everybody else doesn't get it. He says we're only competing against six. And I guarantee you that's how it boils down for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer has had the background. He has the knowledge. He has the ability to go and access and to talk to people, some of the great team builders, some of the great leaders of the world. You know, people will take Urban Meyer's call. If he has questions about, hey, how would you do this? And I applaud him for that because he's always trying to take it a little bit further. You know, he could be really satisfied. He could have been satisfied at Florida or at Ohio State or one of those places. He wasn't. It was just about pushing and pushing and pushing, you know, and that relentless pursuit of trying to make it the best that he could and make it even better after that. And so I think that that's, to me, where if I'm in Jacksonville, I would get excited. Now, I got excited when Bill Parcells came to Dallas because I knew he had a plan. I knew he understood about team building. I knew he understood about culture. It ultimately cost me my job, but it was the best thing for the organization going forward. And I think that's where Urban Meyer is right now. He is going to either, you're coming with me on this or you're not. And it weeds out a lot of the BS in your organization. Yeah. You know, that's where I think that a lot of people get messed up is you have too many people feeling like that they're the reason why the organization is going to have success. And Urban is very focused on, hey, the success is about all of us, not about individuals here.
I do love that. I think there's an angle of massaging the pro's ego as compared to managing amateurs, and that can crosswire you. But to the question,
unless you're going in somewhere where you can literally fire every pro on your team.
Yeah,
and for
him in Jacksonville, that might be the perfect spot for him to implement more of that with full authority. But I do think the pecking order of players is real. It's just semantics. There's no bad players. This is the NFL. Okay, well, there's players who are bad compared to the other NFL players. So chew
that's
on
fair.
That, smart
no,
guy.
That's fair.
But it's very close. And coaching and culture can be a deciding factor.
So then he goes on. He says, it's not whether they run the zone or the stretch play or the three-level passing versus the crossing routes. I know people think that's it. Yeah, it's fun. It's intriguing. But that's not why certain teams win. You walk in the locker room, and you know why they win. And you talk to your players who are in those organizations, and you know exactly why they win. Because the head coach and GM and everyone are aligned with culture and talent acquisition. And I think what I kind of take away from that is, I guess it stopped being surprising to me. I think once upon a time you would think of the world in a way where it's like, well, hold on, if there's 32 pro teams, that means that they've got 32 really smart owners, 32 kick-ass GMs, 32 of the best head coaches, they got the best coordinators, and man, surely it's all streamlined because there's only 32 of these things. But you find out over time that it's just not true. Like, Carolina just had to fire they just fired their GM because they didn't feel like he lined up with what their head coach wanted to do. And it's one of the things that's always thrown me off about pro sports. When there's so much money in it and there's so much to be made by being successful, that these teams aren't good at this. Like, how in the world do you get to a point on a pro sports team? And the Cowboys are part of this. Where it's not a, we're going to look, when I bring in a guy, it's going to be because he fits here, here, and here. Here's our pecking order. This is how our draft works. And like, that's why I think he'll have a shot in Jacksonville, because what's going to be clear in Jacksonville is it's Urban's. Like, there's going to be a GM, there's going to be an owner, and there's going to be coordinators, but it's going to be set up because they're going to empower one person who's going to have the idea of, this is what we're looking for in acquiring talent. This is how we're going to conduct ourselves. But on so many NFL teams, the top of the world in football, you don't have organizations that are aligned to do things the right way. Like Cowboys, here come the coaches wanting to draft players. It's crazy to me that there's only 32 of these. And you would think that all of them would have what he's talking about here figured out. We're all on the same page about how we're acquiring players, and we're all on the same page about who we're going to be. But they're not.
They're not. You're right. You're right.
I think it's why head coaches make so much money, because you're trying to get a magic worker compared to average humans. In order to foster all of this goodwill and harness the creative energy and not have each other resenting or talking behind each other's back, we're all for one, one for all, it's very hard to do.
The buy-in.
There's incredible books written about leadership, but it's intangible.
Yeah. The buy-in is real. You know, and if you're on a staff where you don't buy into what's going on, then you need to be identified and removed, you know, because that's the problem. It's the Parcells used to always talk about the groups of people that would gather, the little groups that would gather. Those were the people that killed your organization, because they would sit there and they would talk about, oh, well, I would do this, I would do that, instead of trying to figure out, hey, you know, we need to do what our bosses are asking us to do right now. We need to push on and be better than this. And I think this is why guys like Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and Bill Belichick are successful, because to them, the culture, the buy-in and all that is really what it's all about. We could lose guys. Nick Saban's going to lose three coaches off his staff. Alabama's going to be number one, number two in the country next year. It doesn't. You know why? Because they built a culture that no matter what happens, they could replace. As long as you have the buy-in and as long as you have the determination to do it and as long as you can coach, then we can have you here and we can win. That's where this is.
All right, now, potential speed bumps for Urban Meyer. He was really good in college football. 187-32, that was his record at all those different stops. It's not all Ohio State. Some of that is Bowling Green and Utah and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he's never coached in the NFL. He's walked away from coaching twice for what they call serious health issues that are exacerbated by stress.
Right.
He had 31 guys at Florida arrested, and when he left, you had culture questions about Florida. He was suspended the first three games his last year at Ohio State because of the Zach Smith cover-up.
Right.
So I guess I wonder, how does that fit in with the culture that he's talking about? Is that just sort of the Jim Garrett thing where it's like, hey, it's not the Boy Scouts. You're gonna acquire players, and they're not all going to be perfect people. You're going to win, and you're going to manage it the best you can? Or how does that line up with the culture that I want to build? He wins. Nobody can take that from him. He wins. He's also walked away multiple times, and he's left multiple schools with culture questions. And that's what I wonder about.
It was more like cultures of looking the other way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the culture that really counts when it comes to wins and losses is how much the players that are there believe, not in is the football team acting in a way that is consistent with the university's value system. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I think it goes to what my concerns are. It's like you took so many shortcuts to win in college. These shortcuts you can't take. And in the pros, you can't charm somebody by going into their living room and talking them out of going to the Steelers. Steelers have a better pick. You know, he's going there.
Yeah, the draft. So, I was going to say, Jerry can kind of do that. Lyle Collins. There's different guys that have options. And Jerry's like, let me get you over to the house.
Oh. Jerry's one of the great closers I've ever been around in my life. Yeah.
Do it to get better free agents,
Jerry. I think that if you look at the program, I think with, you know, Florida is probably a really bad example because they've had some problems there afterwards. Ohio State's program, though, he left Ohio State. You know, Ryan Day and that staff, I mean, we saw them in the national championship game. Yeah, they got beat by a better Alabama team. But him leaving Ohio State with all the things that went on at Ohio State, the questions and stuff like that, I think if you're Jacksonville and Khan, the owner there, you're trying your best to say, listen, we are a rudderless ship right now. We need direction. And if 5 years he completely burns out and leaves you, like I said, I believe that at least you'll have something in place that you could say, okay, the next person we could build off this, or we learned along the way we could build off this. So I think that he'll leave the program in better shape than how he found it.
Okay, and then to polish off, we'll make this a quick college football super corner here. You mentioned that Alabama's going to lose coaches.
Yes.
And I think I said the other day that the 2017 staff of Saban's that won the national title,
mm-hmm.
they were all gone, mm-hmm. and he won with a whole new set of them this year. Well, Steve Sarkisian is going to go to Texas, and Steve Sarkisian is going to bring the Alabama offensive line coach,
yes.
his best line in the country.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to bring the Alabama offensive line coach as his OC, and he's going to bring their special teams coach from Bama, and the special teams coach is going to make $1 million a year at Texas.
Yep.
So, you know, they can do what they got to do monetarily to get guys. The question is, I think we all realize, look, Saban is Saban, and he'll be fine. He'll find people to replace them.
Oh, no.
But how big a boost can that be for Sark that you're bringing a couple of those guys?
No, absolutely. A huge boost. I think he needs to look at the football operations side of it, too. I don't know everybody at the University of Texas on the football operations side, but I want to believe there's probably some good men and women there that could help him recruiting. He needs to set up that way they were tracking players at Alabama. That I think that would be the best plan for him of how they're going about bringing that talent in. And by the way, though, don't worry about Saban. It sounds like the Jeff Southland, who was the offensive line coach, who people at Philadelphia says was the best assistant on Doug Peterson's staff, likely to go back to Alabama where he was a coach there for at last in 2012.
There you have it, Jeff and Brian's segment of the day, 420 every day right here on your home of the Cowboys. We'll go around the NFL next on The Fan. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through The Fan. And time to go around the NFL, brought to you by Metter Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram. Here he is, Jeff Cavanaugh with First Down.
All right, this one I'm only doing because it's entertaining to me. Shout out to Brian Broaddus, who's going back to his 1947 NFL draft background on his green screen.
Chalkboard. We're drafting these players on chalkboards.
After like three rounds, they have to erase it all.
Yeah.
So somebody must be hitting it on a typewriter over there.
Or writing it on the legal pad.
Yeah. Jared Goff is going to start for the Rams this weekend, which is a weird announcement to have to make about the starting quarterback.
Oh, I thought Wolford was going to start.
So Wolford's been ruled out.
Oh, okay? No.
I thought that was a really bizarre headline when you felt like you had to say that your backup has been ruled out. But last weekend, John Wolford was the Rams starter, hurt his neck, because Jamal Adams will hurt your neck. And he didn't practice all this week. And Sean McVay has said John Wolford will not be playing against the Packers this Saturday. So it will be broken thumb Jared Goff taking on the Green Bay Packers. He wasn't very good in the wild card round, but he did enough for him to win that game with the way that they played defense. And Brian, the real reason I'm excited
I know,
about this.
I know where you're going, and I am so hoping he gets in this game.
If it doesn't go well, one of Brian Broaddus' sons, Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles.
Will be the man to take the
My
ball.
Gosh.
Can Blake Bortles go toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers and bring home the dub? Brian, I hope we get to find out. I hope your guy gets in the game.
The snow could be flying, and yes, he could be. He could
cold
be,
weather quarterback,
he could
big
be
strong
the,
guy,
yes,
big hands.
Yes, he could be the guy. He could be everything I thought he was going to be as a player. He could stand in there, make all the throws, drive it through the cold and the wind.
Uh-huh.
You know, yes, Blake Bortles, please come in there and, if you have to save the game, save it for me, please.
I just think it's a really neat story that we had to hear. The backout's been ruled out, so the starter will start.
They might
Jared Goff.
They might want to rule out Blake Bortles, too, is what they might want to do.
Well, somebody's got to take it if Goff can't get it done.
Exactly right.
Somebody got to take it.
Yeah.
Heck, just don't turn it over. If that defense has an afternoon like they did last weekend,
sure did.
Could be enough here. Can you get us 10 points, Blake? We got a shot.
Jalen Ramsey, this is where you're going to show that you're worth all the money. You already have all the money, but if you take Devontae Adams out, I promise you, Green Bay's in trouble. And, like, the Rams, you don't take them seriously as a contender because you don't get good enough quarterback play. But if you can erase Devontae Adams, Jalen Ramsey, we got a chance. We got a chance to do this thing.
Check the cleats.
Make
sure you have the right cleats before you go out there, sir. Please.
they had some big wins during the regular season, a big win against Seattle. I think the Rams team is capable of beating anybody, but if you can't have consistent offense, you're also capable of losing to anybody, as they proved during the regular season.
Absolutely.
All right, and here is Brian Broaddus with Second Down.
Yeah, this is it's always to talk about an LSU guy here, but I go back to the Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson. He calls his he's looking, reflecting back on his rookie season, but he calls his draft position disrespectful, is what he's looking at right now. And you know, he was on a podcast.
You were picked in the first round, Justin. Chill out, dude.
Yeah, but he feels he's disrespected because he got picked behind Henry Ruggs at 12, Jerry Jeudy at 15, CeeDee Lamb at 17, and Jalen Reagor at 21.
Okay, well, I apologize. I was wrong.
Oh,
liked Jalen Reagor, and 1 year in, I look wrong.
Oh.
I should have had you above Ruggs. I knew that Ruggs was a risky pick, but I was in on what he could do for an offense, and I apologize, Justin. It's my fault.
Let's redraft. How about let's redraft here real quick then?
Okay.
Okay, with those five guys, let's redraft. And I have a feeling I know who's going to be last. But if you had to pick, let's go, it's Ruggs, Jeudy, Lamb, Reagor, Jefferson. That's the order they went. Redraft this thing, if you would, Jeff Kavanaugh, wide receiver whisperer.
Oh, gosh. I wish Dak had
played. He can't do it.
Year.
He's too biased.
No, I'm going to do it.
He's going to do it.
I'm going to do
it. He's the whisperer. He is the wide receiver whisperer. If you ever want
Justin
to know.
Jefferson.
Okay, there we go.
Jefferson won.
Mm-hmm. He did it.
CD2.
They did it.
Jeudy 3.
Wait, say again, Jeff. I'm sorry. I was being a jackass.
Jefferson 1.
Okay.
Lamb 2. And that can change. We're only a year in.
Okay.
Like, CD's done nothing to disappoint. He's exactly who you wanted him to be. Jefferson's just been more than I thought he would be. Jefferson, Lamb, Jeudy. And really, we might want to think about that one and think about if you want to bring up T. Higgins and Michael Pittman.
Yeah.
Because 4 and 5 wouldn't be Ruggs and Reagor.
Right.
And the order I would go is, gosh, maybe Reagor and then Ruggs. Ruggs. Either way, they're clearly 4 and 5.
I appreciate you acknowledging T. Higgins, by the way. I couldn't get you to like him like I liked him.
I know. I liked Pittman. We both had a big guy we liked.
We did. We sure
Pittman
did.
Pittman was my guy. Higgins was your guy.
Sure did.
They're both playing well for their teams. But yeah, I would give Jefferson, I'd take Jefferson over Lamb today. And I'm prepared to eat those words next year.
I just wish CeeDee, I keep saying this, I wish
he'd had 1,100 yards with
that. Yeah,
and I'm not disappointed
no
with him in any way.
That.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah. No question. Well, Jefferson, he does feel disrespected. And you know, and he's got a shot to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's the first time a receiver has won this award since Odell Beckham in 2014. And the first Viking player to win it since Percy Harvin in 2009. So that's that for those guys.
I don't want to say CeeDee Lamb's a disappointment or a bust or anything like that. He's certainly going to be a good NFL player.
Here he goes.
Do you think he's going to play with more physicality? You know, there's college basketball players that are so good. They're all Americans, but they're not tall enough or something enough to take over at the NFL level or the, you know, the NBA level.
You'd like to see him improve at that. That's one of those things that in college he was a monster after the catch.
That's what I want to see.
And as a pro, he's just been okay after the catch. So that's something that you would like to see that come along and him be able to run through some more tackles and look a little stronger out there for sure.
Right. If you're driving to the airport right now, figure out a way to go back and watch that Oklahoma tape, how they got him to catch the ball on the move. You know, and you saw him as a punt returner. Come up with more ways to get him the ball. I'm not just talking about the jet sweeps and the hitch screens and stuff like that. Figure out ways to get him the ball where he's running and he's going. That's where CeeDee Lamb can open a lot of eyes. Oklahoma, that was his calling card. Take a short pass. Next thing you know, it's a 70-yard gain against UCLA. You know, yeah. We saw that plenty of times.
I forgot about Claypool. Claypool would be 4, maybe T. Higgins 5.
Yeah. You know, they say the running quarterback, once you get to the NFL, these guys are too fast and too strong. You can't quite do that.
Unless you're Lamar.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Unless you're faster than all of them.
Hey, let me see. Is your last name Vic? No? Okay. Are you Lamar Jackson? No.
Let me tell you this, though, guys. I've learned this. You draft these guys. If you have them for 5 years, you do your very best with them for 5 years, and you draft somebody else. You know, the long-term stuff. I just don't think it's – I don't think with salary caps and things like that, I don't know if we can keep guys long-terms anymore. Maybe it's the whole thing with the running backs too. 5 years, you're gone. New running back. Or 3 years, new running back, you're gone. You know, maybe that's what the league is coming to, because college football is that way. There's so many receivers, you know. And there's so many receivers out there that you could just – you know, you just keep kind of keep running through guys.
I think there's going to be about 6 to 10 guys per team that you really commit to with the way that the cap works.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with your point. But I think the smart teams are being extra, extra careful on who the players are, and you better check all the boxes. And they're trying to construct contracts to potentially get out of those deals or trade those deals at the first sign of trouble. Because what you're talking about is supply and demand.
Yeah.
And there's a supply of quality football players. You're in the catbird seat as the team. Take the players with the least possible amount of risk with the ones that you do decide to hang on to long term.
There's your offensive line. There's your building. Maybe the guys you're talking about, generalists, keep the offensive line intact, find your quarterback, and then now we're going to shuffle everybody else out.
Yeah, and you know, what are the positions with staying power? That's it. Receiver, offensive line, maybe corner.
Corner,
you know?
Yeah.
Corner guys can play into their 30s. So, again, it's less risk. I feel like I'm keeping this guy in, and for 8 to 12 years, he's going to be that good of a football player. I've checked out the durability through his first 4 or 5 years of his rookie deal. The character is there. There's no reason to be concerned. The competes, everything. It checks all the boxes. Now, if you can't draft those guys, then you can spend free agent money or trade for guys from other teams. You don't say, oh, well, this guy Sean Lee has been hurt and just devastated, but we like him. And, boy, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a really good linebacker.
Yeah.
$8 million a year in 2013.
Don't take those risks.
No, you don't have to.
You don't have to.
Okay, third down here around the NFL. And I do love Sean Lee, but the career, it's just like if you go back and do it all over again, you wouldn't want to from an objective team perspective. Russell Wilson says he considers it a critical point in his career, and he wants to be included in the decision on who's going to be the next offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Between what's happening with Deshaun Watson and other players and now Russell Wilson saying it, it really feels like that we're in the midst of it evolving. And the quarterback salaries jumping and the responsibility that they feel that they are entitled to with that job as far as getting in charge of hiring who's the coach, that's what we're seeing, right? They're trying to make this push. The NBA players effectively did it. I'm in charge of everything if I'm in the MVP conversation or I'm going to leave your organization.
I love it. What Russ needs to do is every time they bring in the OC, he's sitting in there in the room and he's wearing an apron and a chef's hat. And he's like, you got any problem with this outfit, coach?
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, you may leave.
How about just bring lunch in every day? You know, just
I cook. It's what I do.
That's what I do. I cook.
We good?
Yeah.
I like that. It is the G-Bag Nation around the NFL daily at 4:40. We're on our way now to the 5 o'clock hour. And the Cowboys topic of the day, we want your feedback. Would you be willing to promote him to head coach to prevent the OC from being the head coach of the Eagles? That's next in the Nation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.